Nancy Lehmanser for Mr. Ortiz.
And for the secretary?
Tracy, also for the secretary, and to my right, Deputy Assistant General Counsel Calvin Washington.
Very well. Ms. Lehman, you have 30 minutes for argument. Do you wish to reserve any of that time for rebuttal?
Yes, sir. I'd like to reserve 10 minutes.
10?
Yes.
All right. When you're ready, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Nancy Lehman. I'm representing the veteran, Roberto Ortiz, in this matter. We before the court on the veteran's motion to reconsider the single-judge memorandum decision of July 28, 2008, which upheld the board's August 9, 2005 decision denying the veteran's appeal for an earlier effective date for an award of service connection for his bipolar condition and his unemployability benefits.
Before you go any further, did you take a look at the brief you filed with the court?
Yes, sir.
Did you take a look at page 17?
The initial brief, Your Honor?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
And you cite to Myers towards the bottom then, M-E-Y-E-R-S, one bed app?
Yes.
And in your index, you cite in Roman numeral 2, you cite to Myers, M-E-Y-E-R-S?
Yes, sir.
And back to 17, in the last paragraph beginning on that page, you cite to M-Y-E-R-S?
Yes, sir, that was a mistake on my part.
Which? Is it a mistake in citing to misspelling or?
It's a misspelling, Your Honor.
Are you sure it's a misspelling?
I believe it is.
Because you then quote from the M-Y-E-R-S, which is an existing case, which is a very important case, which is very significant to this appeal. You interpose the two throughout your brief. It was very confusing.
I apologize, Your Honor. I do have the case here, and I will review it to supplement with the correct citation.
I don't think you need to supplement it. We've already got it.
It's M-Y-E-R-S, sir. I stand corrected.
There are two cases.
It's the M-Y-E-R-S versus Derwinski, one vet app.
And its site is?
It looks like 1271.
Right. So you cited two Myers cases.
Yes, sir. And...
and you did mix them up throughout your discussion, by the way.
I apologize, sir. The case I'm relying on today would be the one Vet App 1271 case, where there was a claim for pension and compensation.
You might want to rely on the other Myers. But go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. The issue here is the veteran filed to reopen a prior claim for service connection for his bipolar condition on May 29, 1979. He filed two pieces of correspondence after receiving a statement of the case, and the issue is whether those pieces of correspondence form the basis of a substantive appeal. The review, the standard of review is de novo, based on the Gibson versus Peek case, and the remedy we're seeking is for the court to vacate the board's decision and remand to the board to consider those pieces of correspondence a substantive appeal that would leave the May 1979 claim pending and unadjudicated, and to re-adjudicate the effective date based on that date forward and assign the appropriate disability rating. In the memorandum decision...
Does it matter if those documents actually constitute a substantive appeal?
Yes, sir, it does.
Why?
Because that would leave the May 1979 claim to reopen the previous denial.
Who can make a decision with regard to the adequacy of a document that is filed in response to the statement of the case?
I believe that the court makes a decision de novo.
Who? What does the statute say? At the time, it was 4005.
Well, Judge, I'm relying on the Gibson case saying that the court can make a de novo determination.
I understand that.
Okay.
My question is, does it matter in this case? If you take a look at 38 U.S.C. 4005, D3, it says that the agency of original jurisdiction may close the case for failure to respond after receipt of the statement of the case. But questions as to timeliness or adequacy of response shall be determined by the board. Was any determination made by the board below as to the adequacy of the response that was provided in this instance?
The board noted the pieces of paper.
This current board did.
Yes, sir.
Prior to this current board making a decision, had any board prior to that made a decision with regard to the adequacy of the response that was provided by your client?
Of the 1980 letters?
That's correct.
No, sir, not that I'm aware
so
of.
So if no board had made a decision prior to this board, that remained open, did it not?
I'm sorry, sir, I'm not following you.
If your client had responded to yes. the statement of the case,
yes.
only the Board of Veterans Appeals could render a decision as to whether or not it was adequate.
Correct. And
the regional office could not render a decision, could it not?
No, correct? It could not.
So if no decision had been rendered prior to this board decision, it remained open during that time period, did it
yes.
not? Regardless of whether or not it actually constituted a substantive appeal.
Well, the regional office had denied the May 79 initial claim to reopen, and then the veteran filed his two pieces of correspondence, and then really nothing
and those,
happened.
And those pieces of correspondence were a response to the statement of the case,
correct, and the board wrote back to the veteran saying, sir, you never filed your I-9.
Did the board write back or did the regional office?
I'm sorry, so the regional office wrote back to the veteran saying,
so the point I'm trying I-9. To get from you is that until a decision is rendered by the board with regard to the adequacy of those filings, it remained open. So at the time your client filed his reopening in, what, 94?
Yes, sir.
It was the previous claim was still open.
That's my, yes, sir. That's what
so
I believe.
So this, the board's decision in this case would be moot. It doesn't matter if, in fact, it constituted a substantive appeal, does it?
I think it does because it's the reason that the board did not go back to an earlier effective date. The 2005 board decision saying, we're sorry we're not going back before an effective date of 1994 was based on the fact that they felt
but
that...
But wasn't that determination moot? In other words, when your client filed in 1994, the earlier claim was, in fact, still open because no board had, in fact, determined that a substantive appeal had not been filed, and only the board has the statutory authority to do so.
Right.
Okay.
Do you have anything else?
Yes, sir, I do. If you look at the statutory reference of the regulation 3819.116, in the memorandum decision, it was the court's feeling that the pieces of correspondence the veterans filed did not constitute a substantive appeal because the veteran should set out specific allegations of errors in fact or law. And for that reason, the memorandum decision decided that you did not have to give a liberal and sympathetic reading to the correspondence. It's our contention that the use of the word should in that regulatory language was a suggestion. It was not a mandate. And we're relying on several cases for that, Your Honor, one being Gomez v. Principi, 17 Vet F 369. That case involved a form I-9 where the veteran had to check a box on the form indicating his appeal would be reviewed by all the evidence of record. And although that form I-9 was not the form that was used in 1980, I think it's instructive to look at the concurring opinion where Judge Steinberg analyzed the exact same language that we're talking about today in the statute, which is...
Is there any difference between the statute then and now?
Yes, there is,
sir. And what's that difference?
I don't have that in front of me, Your Honor, but my recollection of the statute now is there's a stricter requirement on the veteran as far as what allegations need to be pled in the I-9 to form a substantive appeal.
But in 1979, it was said that there should be allegations of error.
Correct.
And your argument is that really if a veteran only said, I appeal, is that sufficient?
No, Judge, I'm not arguing that. In the context of this case, I'm looking at what is the reason why somebody has to file a substantive appeal. The reason is you need to give the board or the lower adjudicative body notice that you intend to go forward with your appeal. You filed your notice of disagreement. You've received your statement of the case, which gives you the reasons why the regional office has made the determination. Now you need to let the board know, one, yes, I intend to go forward with my appeal, and two, here's why. Here are the errors.
Now, in all fairness to the RO, who has to deal with thousands of these documents each day, if an individual receives a statement of the case, he or she would be advised that they have 60 days to respond to that statement of the case, or 1 year, whichever is later, in order to file their appeal. And they're given instructions to file an I-9.
Yes, sir.
That's correct?
Yes.
So the adjudicator is awaiting for some type of document that would indicate to them that it's an appeal.
Right.
And they have to make that decision. And so in this case, it's your position that Mr. Ortiz, the two documents were in response to the statement of the case.
Right, and the reason I'm saying that, Judge, is because when you look at this case, the issue was very narrow. It was, did he provide new and material evidence to reopen a prior denial? That was the only issue that he filed for. The rating decision was a one-page decision saying, no, there's no new and material evidence.
Suppose he had received service connection, but he had a contest on the rating. Would you think that that statement by Mr. Ortiz would have been sufficient to indicate an appeal as to the rating?
Well, Your Honor, his first piece of correspondence indicated he wanted to know the status of his claim of appeal to Washington, which was...
Okay. Now, asking for status, would you
right.
think that's fairly comprehensive to an adjudicator that that's an appeal?
I think if the only issue was the increase in rating, then yes, it would be. If you look at the context in a whole and you look at all the documents, some of the other cases that were cited, the cases were much more complex. In one case, a gentleman had filed for service connection and compensation benefits. That was denied. Then he filed for pension benefits for the same conditions. That was granted, and there was a rating decision that kind of subsumed the other one, and he filed his substantive appeal, and he mentioned compensation and compensation pension, and he gave some more detail. That was a much more complicated case. In a case where the only problem is the rating decision, I think, yes, that would be enough.
Let's assume it's not clear and the RO can't tell, the regional office can't tell. Did they have the authority to close the case?
If the regional office can't tell, I don't think they have the authority to close the case. I mean, they pass it up to the BVA, and then the BVA would make a determination as to whether that was adequate notice. But in this case, it's such a simple issue, and it's the adequacy of what papers did he submit. Were they new and material evidence to reopen his claim for service connection? When you look at why the RO ultimately granted the benefits, it was because he had provided them with a statement from a private psychiatrist who looked at the claims file and did kind of a timeline history review of all his behavior, diagnoses, et cetera, determined that the veteran had been misdiagnosed. He actually had a bipolar disorder, which clearly evidenced itself in service.
Counselor, by my count, your client was given three precise opportunities to file an I-9, was told to file an I-9, was given an I-9, was given a letter saying you must file an I-9, and didn't file an I-9. Now, at some point, isn't there some responsibility on the part of the veteran and or his representative or her representative to cooperate? You know, the duty to assist, I believe we have case law coming from Judge Nebaker, says that's not a one-way street, you know. And in terms of adjudicating in an appellate context the issues, you have to define the issues. And if the veteran is being uncooperative, how is it that we are supposed to proceed in an appellate manner, in an efficient manner, so that the RO is not spending all of his or her time re-adjudicating everything that may or may not be contested?
Well, I agree. It would be better for all of us if he had actually filed an actual I-9. But I think he did try to cooperate, Judge.
Or a letter that conforms with the Archibald.
I think he did cooperate, Judge. He did say, I want to appeal. He did say, please search the records. Please give me an evaluation. And in the context of the only issue being, did he provide new and material evidence, I don't think it would be difficult for the adjudicating body to determine what the issue was. That was the only issue. It was even the statement of the case, their decision portion, it's very narrow. It's not more than two sentences saying the evidence you submitted is cumulative and repetitious. It's not new and material. And he's writing to them saying, what's the status of my appeal? I want to appeal to Washington. Please search the records. please give me an evaluation. And he did it twice.
Why did he file an I-9?
Pardon me?
Why did he not file an I-9?
He said that he did. I believe he said he filed an I-9 in November of 1979. It was not in the record. So whether he was mistaken or it didn't make its way to the record, I don't think we'll be able to determine that. But I think he made every effort that he could, given his limitations and given the system, to provide the board with, yes, I intend to appeal, and here's why. I want you to search my records. I want you to give me an evaluation because it was such a narrow issue. If it had been, I want individual unemployability, and I have psychiatric condition, and I have an orthopedic disorder, and by the way, I want pension, then I don't think these would be sufficient. But in the context where this is such a narrow issue, I think that the board was on notice of the intent to appeal and what the errors were.
The RO did pretty definitively state that a form had to be filed. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Does the RO have the authority to require such a form to be filed?
No, sir. I don't believe that back then a form had to be filed. I think it could be correspondence. That
was under 19.116, which was in effect at the time?
Correct. No, I don't believe they had the authority to mandate.
It said, or its equivalent in correspondence?
Right. Correct. The veteran had to do something.
So whatever the veteran came back with in response, even if it was not on a form, wouldn't that have to be forwarded to the board for determination?
Yes. And just speaking to the issue of that was before the RO as to whether there was new and material evidence, I believe that the outcome would have been different if the board had looked at the two letters as a substantive appeal and remanded, because what happened in 1994 was after they received the report from the private psychiatrist, they sent the veteran for an examination with a VA psychiatrist who essentially agreed with this private psychiatrist that the disorder was bipolar disorder, that it had manifested in service and should be service connected. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Allison.
Yes, Your Honor.
Any reason why the RO did not refer that to the board?
Well, Your Honor, at the time, appellant did not argue that it was a substantive appeal. The last letter that went out was the second letter from the regional office explaining that they had not received a VA Form 19 and giving him another copy so that he could perfect his appeal.
But they had received correspondence.
They did receive correspondence, yes, Your Honor.
And equivalent correspondence can be submitted. You don't have to file an I-9.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. But obviously,
so who makes the determination as to whether or not it's an appeal?
Well, ultimately the board does, but the appellant needs to appeal that issue to the board.
How?
Well, he can say, I filed a substantive appeal, or I perfected my appeal.
What was he referring to when he mentioned Washington?
Well, there's some question. He could have certainly meant the board.
There's some question.
Yes, there's some question, Your Honor.
To be resolved by the RO or by the board?
Well, the RO has to make initial determination, then it can be reviewed by the board, but that issue needs to be up on appeal. The secretary would assert that issue never really went up on appeal because
I see what you're saying. You're saying that the RO determined that there was no correspondence, basically.
Yes.
Because that's really the only time the RO can really close it out is if there's no response.
Correct, right.
And so there being no response, that is a decision that is appealable.
Correct, Your Honor.
And there was no appeal by the veteran to the board on the question of these documents are not an appeal.
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, in 1994, he specifically said, I want to reopen my claim. So he's clearly understood that it had been previously closed, or that denial had been previously denied, and that he needed to reopen it by his own by his own action, by his own admission.
On what basis do you believe the RO could determine that it was not an appeal? And then as you respond, take a look at 38-4005. I'll read it again. The agency of original jurisdiction may close the case for failure to respond. It doesn't say failure to submit an appeal. It doesn't say failure to submit a form. It says on failure to respond after receipt of the statement of the case. We clearly have a response after receipt of the statement of the case, do we not?
Yes.
Questions as to timeliness or adequacy of response, not of an appeal, just of a response, shall be determined by the Board of Veterans' Appeals. And if you go to your regs at the time, actually, I don't have the regs at that particular time, but even currently, they talk about the regional office making determination as to timeliness, but nowhere in your regs does it give the regional office any authority to make a determination as to adequacy.
Well, yes, Your Honor, but the whole issue of this case is what were those correspondence?
Why? There were a response.
Well,
why are we making it an issue as to content even?
Well, because he specifically said, what is the status of my claim? I mean, that could come at any point. There is question whether or not he's intending to perfect his appeal at that point. So the RO did not respond to these letters that they received as if they were a substantive appeal. So,
but did they have to be a substantive appeal in the RO's mind to forward them to the board? The statute doesn't require that.
Well,
the statute only requires that a response be determined by one entity, the board.
Well, what would clue the board into taking this case?
I would assume that the regional office would say this is a response from the individual to the statement of the case. Mr. Board, what do you want to do with it?
Perhaps it could work that way, but in this case, they didn't interpret his statements as an attempt to perfect his appeal. And they interpreted it as a non-response.
But isn't that giving more authority to the regional office than the statute gives? There's just no interpretation whatsoever. It's a response to a statement of the case. Goes forward to the board, and they make a determination as to adequacy.
Well, practically speaking, there must be some preliminary interpretation of what's going on.
Why? Who says it goes to the RO to begin with?
Well, Your Honor, again, I mean, what if just so happens that he happens to be within 60 days, but he says something completely different, like, I'm interested in the status of another claim, or, I'm looking for...
Well, if it was to another claim, it wouldn't be in response to the statement of the case.
Okay. Maybe it's even more uncertain than that. I'm just requesting status, period. I mean, at what point is it sufficient enough to where the regional office needs to pull, bring it to the board's attention to have the board make a decision?
Wouldn't it be right at the very beginning when it responds? Because if somebody asks, after receiving a statement of the case, what is the status of my case, it might be a situation where, as in this case, they had submitted a 1-9 or 9-1, whatever, and the regional office had lost it. I'm still at a loss as to why the regional office has these authorities. I don't see where it is in statute or in regulation.
Well, again, the regional office did not interpret these letters as an attempt to perfect his appeal.
I mean, for example, would the regional office make a determination with regard to an appeal to the court, or would they just forward it to the court?
Well, if the regional office interpreted as there was an attempt to perfect his appeal, then they would forward it to the board.
True, that's a little different because the statute doesn't say a response to it.
Right, Your Honor. Okay, again, these letters do not constitute a substantive appeal because on their face it is unclear. As Judge Lance pointed out in his memorandum decision in this case, the March and May 1980 statements fail to do more than identify the issue. Appellant has not asserted any error of fact or law for the board and the court to construe liberally. Under 38 CFR section 19.123, the regulation at that time and the underlying statute, such allegations or arguments such arguments should be related to specific items in the statement of the case. In this case, there was no allegation or argument of error.
But that's never been mandated, has it?
Well, Your Honor, the Secretary of Church, it's in the statute.
It says should.
It does say should, yes.
So I'll go back to my question. It's never been mandated, has it? In fact, according to the Gomez case, it references to a time period when there was denied Form 9 had a no box with regard to the issues on appeal.
Yes.
And that was sufficient.
Well, the court specifically found in that case that the VA had waived any additional pleading requirements on the part of the appellant because the form itself was confusing. But again, in that case, Your Honor, there was no question that he had perfected his appeal. The board did not, there was no issue that whether or not he had perfected his appeal.
Why wasn't there a question?
Well, because he had filled out a VA Form 9 and completed it.
And here, didn't Mr. Ortiz said he filled out a Form 9?
He indicated that he had, but the regional office
This was the second response. In the first response, he wanted to know the status of what?
His
claim on appeal.
Right.
He used the word on appeal, thinking that he had appealed, and it referred to his claim for a nervous condition, which was the claim that was denied.
Right. That's right. In Gomez, though, again, there was a VA Form 9, and it was understood that he had perfected his appeal, and that was not an issue.
Don't you think the RO in this case, probably because there was no I-9, that was the basis for closing it out?
The RO had felt that he hadn't perfected his appeal, and that's the reason that they closed it out in this case.
Because there was no I-9.
Well, that's what they had expected, yes.
In fact, they demanded it, did they not?
Yes, Your Honor. They asked him for a VA Form 9. But again, when an appellate submits a VA Form 9, there's no question as to what he's trying to do. It's said on, bold letters, appeal to the Board of Veterans' Appeals. You fill it out, you send it in. There's no question.
But isn't that the point of the statute, which says that the adequacy of the response shall be determined by the board? In other words, if it comes on the form, yes, the RO knows. But if it comes on anything else, the RO doesn't know.
Let me ask you something else then. All right. So in the second response, he indicates, I've already filled this out.
Right.
So he's telling the RO, you've got an appeal from me on the denial of my nervous condition claim. Now, the RO, armed with that information, and while the board has to do the liberal construction, I guess, not the RO, is that correct?
Right, right.
They responded back to him, did they not?
Right.
And how did they respond back to him?
They said that they don't have it, and they provided him another VA Form 9 to perfect his...
And they didn't even address him correctly, did they?
I'm sorry, I don't understand really what you mean.
Do you have a copy of the letter?
Yeah.
Who is it addressed to?
I see it. Mr. Ordell, I think they misspelled his name.
That's not another name for Ortiz.
No, Your Honor, it's not. But I think that...
Is the address correct?
Yeah, what form did they give him? And what form was attached to that letter?
It says here, according to your letter of May 2nd, 1980, your claim, you have sent VA Form 19. However, this form was never received in the Veterans Administration. We are sending a new Form 19 for completion of signature. If not received within 30 days, no further action will be taken on your appeal.
And what was attached?
The VA Form 19.
Well, what's attached in the record, which indicates to us that was the attachment?
I see there's another attachment in the record.
Not an I-9?
That's correct. Again, though, I would assume that the... apologize to the court for the record, but I would assume that the regional office had...
So why wouldn't we assume that the record's correct and that was what was sent? His name is misspelled. It wasn't forwarded to the board.
Well, because I think pages, as time goes on...
I suspect Mr. Ortiz, if he received that letter, and I guess the address might be the same, but if he received that letter, he probably did not return that form or any other form. I guess he was confused.
He may have been, Your Honor, but again, I think it was clear that the RO explained to him that they had not, what they had received, they did not feel had perfected his appeal, and that was clear from the face of the front of the document. And again, if there was some confusion, in 1994, he did specifically state he intended to reopen his claim.
Now, that was the second letter that you were just addressing, right?
Correct.
And then there was a third attempt to get Mr. Ortiz to file a Form 9, was there not?
A third attempt. Well, I think there was a statement of the case, and there were two letters. There was the April 80 and the June letter, in addition to the statement of the case that provided the...
And with the proper name, with the proper address?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
The regional office April 1980 letter has Ortiz.
Do you accept responsibility as counsel for how the record is prepared?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, as I talked with your opposing counsel before, it appears as though there's been a lack of attention to it.
Yes.
If you're taking your assumption that the 9 was attached to it.
Yes, Your Honor. Again, getting back to the statute and how it's set out, if the court is to interpret the word should as appellant contends, then the sentence, the appeal should set out specific allegations of error or fact or law, would have no meaning, and the sentence, or the rest of the sentence, such allegations related to specific items in the statement of case would also have no meaning. Additionally, in the regulation, it states that...
But why do you go that far? I don't follow you at all. The appeal should set out specific allegations. The agency of original jurisdiction may close it for failure to respond, but questions as to timeliness or adequacy of response. In other words, it may or may not have set them out. The board will make a determination as to whether or not it can proceed, whether or not there's one issue in here or not. I mean, at the time, we know they had a form that said if you check the no box, all issues are concerned. Why would you say there's inconsistency?
What's the point of the sentence, then? If it's just
because you should.
Well,
what's the point of the statutory requirements for the secretary to give all veterans notice with regard to their benefits? Said to be hortatory by the Federal Circuit.
Well,
it should. It's something that you should do. But if you don't, does that... I mean, it's the board that determines whether or not it meets the requirements, is it not?
Well, if... Your Honor, I think that under the meaning of the statute, if he does not, then he runs the risk, he or she runs the risk of the board dismissing it.
I totally agree with you. Did the board ever get this to render a decision as to dismissal prior to the current case we have now?
It didn't go up on appeal on that issue.
Well, that's the only way it can go?
Well, I think there has to be an issue that's forwarded to the board. In this case, again, the regional office didn't interpret his correspondence as perfecting appeal, so they didn't send it up to the board. Again, if we go back to the legislative history of the 1962 statute.
Before you do that, look at bow leg five. We have the provision where it says should, and in five it says the board may dismiss. So none of those are mandatory.
Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Legislative history of 1962, Senator Byrd explained that any statement of fact contained in the statement of the case to which no exception is taken by the claimant would be prima facie evidence as to the correctness of such statement. Now, that was incorporated as D4, which states in the statute 38 U.S.C. section 4005, the appellant will be presumed to be in agreement with any statement of fact contained in the statement of case to which no exception is taken. Now, I know that... recently, that has been changed in the recent statute and regulation. However, in 1980, that was still in effect. And again, it goes to the congressional intent that there would be an allegation of error.
So accepting all that, who makes that determination?
Ultimately, the board does, Your Honor.
Where does it say anybody can make that determination before the board?
Well, it doesn't say that.
Does the regulation say that?
No, the regulation does not say that.
I have a very curious question here, because you said something that really, maybe I've missed this in the procedural process over my 11 years here. But if Mr. Ortiz thinks he appealed his denial, And then, in your position, he receives a letter saying, you didn't file your I-9, fill this out, and if you don't, your case is closed. Is that right?
Yes, yes.
How does he ever know that he can appeal that determination?
Well, Your Honor, I
you're saying that the board gets to determine whether or not those documents are an appeal. How does that he must appeal to the board that question. How does he get notice to appeal that question?
Well, there would have to be, again, Your Honor, there would have to be some response to this. He didn't respond to the second letter until 1994, and then, again, he just attempted to reopen his claim. If he continued to explain that he had perfected his appeal, it could be forwarded up to the board at that
point. Did he get the second letter? The one that was addressed to a different person?
Appellant has not alleged that he did not receive it.
But there is no requirement, and I guess the answer is there's no requirement for the RO to then notify the veteran that your case has been closed because you did not appeal and the documents that you did submit are not considered an appeal. You can appeal that determination to the board?
I don't think in this case there's anything in place because, again, there was some confusion about what he intended to do with the letters he submitted.
Well, if there's confusion, then the RO should have sent it to the board.
There's nothing in place that requires them to do that.
Except that the statute and the regulations say that the board makes the determination as to whether or not the documents constitute an appeal, and they do so in a liberal manner.
Well, yes, Your Honor, and generally what happens is somebody argues and says, no, I appealed that in, you know, last year, and then the Radin decision comes out, we found that you didn't timely appeal, and then he disagrees, and then it goes up on the issue, and so then the board does, as the statute explains, make that determination.
So it's appealing the determination as to whether or not I did appeal.
Correct. Yes, Your Honor.
But again, how do you get notice to do that?
Then was the RO's letter telling him that they had not received the Form 9 a regional office decision to which his response saying, hey, you did, you got it, don't have to file another one in NOD?
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to back you up a minute. You're saying that the first, okay, when...
When the regional office came back to the veteran and said, you have to file the 9, and the veteran came back and said, I already did, why do I have to file another one? Is that considered an NOD? I mean, if that's considered a regional office decision, I guess that would be an NOD.
Well, again, Your Honor, I mean, I don't think it's that clear from his letter. I mean, he says a lot of things in his letter. He says...
Well, in a pro-claimant environment, if it's not clear, what should you do?
Well, again, the regional office said, you know, if you want to continue this to appeal to the board, just fill out this form and send it in. And expected that if he wanted to continue his appeal. I mean, there are a number of situations when a rating decision comes out, they disagree with that, and then they get a statement in the case, and then they don't pursue the appeal any further.
But I thought you said earlier that the regional office could not impose that requirement in the face of a statute and regulation that says he didn't have to fill out a form.
Well, again, Your Honor, I mean, we don't know what these letters are supposed to be. I mean, there's some question, and so...
And shouldn't the board have determined that?
Well... If the issue of whether or not he appealed is appealed to the board, then the board makes that determination. But there's an appeal process that sets that out. In this case, that there's nothing that gets you to that point.
Doesn't your response to the statement of the case get you to that point, according to the statute?
I think there has to be, again, he must identify the issue he intends to appeal.
And who determines that? I think it comes back to the same question, the board.
Right.
So the board never determined that. I mean, we might say that this current board did, but until this current board gets into the picture, this thing remained open for the board to make a determination. The RO can close it all he wants to, but it isn't closed.
But he didn't argue that he had completed his appeal until the effective date issue came into existence. In 94, he didn't argue that he had an ongoing appeal in front of. Doesn't the claimant have some duty to You know, if that's what he truly believed, that he'd perfected his appeal back in 1980, you know, why in 94 does he submit a claim to reopen?
Assuming he got a letter that was addressed to another person.
Well, he must. I mean, what other explanation would there be for him to state, I want to reopen my appeal? I hereby request to reopen my claim for nervous condition due. He says that in July 1994. And that is on record 207.
When was Tablazon decided?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, what did you say?
When was the case Tablazon decided?
When was the case?
Tablazon? The one that talked about a case remaining open when the board didn't follow its procedures.
I'm not really sure what date.
So maybe at the time he filed in 1994, no one realized that these claims remained open as a matter of law until the procedures were followed. And so therefore he submitted a reopening. I mean, you're dealing with a veteran here.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you're dealing with the requirement statutory and morally to liberally read these documents. And you're dealing with another statute that says only the board makes its determinations. And yet somehow or another the regional office has got responses to a statement of the case. I don't think anyone's debating that. It's a response. And the regional office made a determination in some way, shape, or form it was insufficient. And from the reading of these documents, it looks like it was strictly because it wasn't on a particular form, which also violates the statute and the regulation. So you have a dual situation of a regional office usurping this authority. Now, back in that time period, there was no case law, and maybe that's the way it was done, but looking at it and applying the case law and looking at the statutes, you see a situation where the regional office, the only action, the only proper action, was to forward it to the board. That did not happen. It left it open. At the time the reopening came in, that claim was open, fused as one, and frankly, the board's decision today and whether or not this really does constitute a substantive appeal is moot because it just remained open.
Well, Your Honor, again, back to the statute. The statute did intend that he would submit some allegation or argument of error in the statement of the case, and that was the original congressional intent, and neither of those letters do that. So it's reasonable for the regional office to assume that he has not perfected his appeal. They send him another letter asking him to perfect his appeal. He doesn't respond, and then they close the case for failure to respond, and that is the procedure of what happens. And again, since there was no unadjudicated claim, pending, the appropriate effective date would be based on the 1994 claim as it was granted, is what appellant was granted. And therefore, the court should affirm the board decision in this case. Thank you.
You know, there's one other matter I want to take note of, and that is, that record 184 is the translation of Mr. Ortiz's statement, May 12th statement, which serves as the predicate as to whether or not that constitutes an appeal. I note that his whole statement that he submitted to the RO was in Spanish, and it's two and a quarter pages long. And the translation is a half a page long. And I don't know who interpreted it, but I think that adds another little bit of confusion to the matter.
Well, I think, Your Honor, actually, page 185, record at 185 and record at 186 are the same page. It's just in there twice.
Okay.
So it's actually one page and then 187.
Okay. But I do know that it's in Spanish.
Yes, Your Honor. If there aren't any further questions, thank you.
Rebuttal?
Yes, sir. Just briefly, Your Honors, If you look at the statutory scheme to provide veterans with benefits, it's veteran-friendly, it's non-adversarial, it's designed to put benefits in the hands of veterans and give them even the benefit of the doubt when the evidence is in equipoise. When you look at these two pieces of correspondence, I think they do meet the criteria for a substantive appeal. I intend to appeal. Here's the errors. Please search the records and give me an examination. And for those reasons, I think that the case should be remanded for further development for the effective date and stage ratings. And does the court have any questions? No? Thank you for your courtesy.
Very well. The case is submitted. We will greet the counsel at the bar, and the court will be adjourned.
All rise. This honorable court is adjourned until further notice.